Hey, it's Kurt Pascara, Kirky B from the Biscodini Organ Trio.
Hi, this is Scott Healy with the Biscodini Organ Trio.
This is John Chiodini, Biscodini Organ Trio, and you're listening to the Music Journeys podcast.
Welcome to the Music Journeys podcast. I'm Mike Foley. The band members of Biscodini Organ Trio are well-established musicians who've been playing random gigs together for years. COVID-19 prevented them from doing that in 2020, but the pandemic brought them together in an unexpected way to record an album. The trio called the 10-track release Lockdown. Here on Music Journeys, drummer Kurt Pascara, organist Scott Healy, and guitarist John Chiodini share how the songs came together, take us back to when the love of music began, and reflect on what it's meant to them to be in music for so many years. They even crafted a song with this program in mind. We'll preempt the Fast Five and close out the show with a song called Mr. Mike. Kurt, Scott, and John of Biscodini Organ Trio are featured guests on this edition of Music Journeys. Thanks for listening.
We are the Biscodini Organ Trio, and this is our music journey.
If there's a theme to the first release from Biscodini Organ Trio, it might be the song 2020 Shuffle. Drummer Kurt Pascara, organist Scott Healy, and guitarist John Chiodini had to shuffle their plans like everyone else during the pandemic. While they couldn't get together for live gigs anymore, Pascara had an idea.
I'm going to record a drum groove, and I'm going to send it to you guys. And whatever you come up with, it's going to be the right thing because I just trust them. I know how they play. They're professionals. It was no question in what they would come up with. I then called my dear friend Bob Daspit and said, hey, can you throw a quick mix on this? And let's just see what this sounds like. You know, we're thinking of maybe doing a couple of tunes. Let's see. Bob did it within hours and he said, okay, here, check this out. And the three of us were so blown away. We're like, okay, let's do another one. And it just kept going and going. And within a 2-month period during the lockdown of 2020 last year, we were able to come up with this record. And it was only fitting that we called it Lockdown. Was a musician, and when she was 8.5 months pregnant with me, she was playing in her jazz organ trio. She played B3 and piano. So whenever I hear a B3 organ, the thumb goes in the mouth and I march immediately to a B3. So I came up playing in nightclubs with her when I started at age 11 playing in nightclubs. And during the break, I'd have to go sit in the lobby of the bar or the restaurant. And being exposed to a lot of music because my mom's day gig was working at the Columbia Records pressing plant, which was in my hometown of Santa Maria, California. Coming from a Filipino background, you know, it was always food and music. So our house kind of became the place where you would gather for the parties, and always wanted to be a studio drummer. And I studied underneath Joe Porcaro, and Ralph Humphrey, who are amazing drummers and percussionists. And it was 3 weeks prior to my graduation where I auditioned for Morris Day and the Time after he left Prince and his original band, The Time, and he went solo. And he had a solo record called Color of Success. And he was auditioning drummers for that tour. Found out about this audition for Morris and being a big Prince fan and, you know, Minneapolis funk fan. I went down and auditioned. It was a big cattle call, over 50 drummers. And lo and behold, I was the last drummer and got the gig. So that was the beginning of my career. And that was in 1985 of August.
Biscara hasn't stopped since, recording and or touring with some of music's biggest names, including Sir Elton John, Mick Jagger, Tom Petty, Pharrell Williams, John Legend, Johnny Cash, and Bonnie Raitt. Biscodini organist Scott Healy also started music at an early age in the Buckeye State.
When I was a four-year-old in Cleveland, Ohio, actually, born in Shaker Heights, raised in Willoughby, Lake County, Northern Ohio. My grandma was a music teacher and a piano teacher. She taught me at a very tender age how to basically the organ technique, which is different than the piano, even though I was a pretty precocious piano player. She rooted me in playing the drawbars and a little bit of pedals, but mainly just the right and left hand technique at an early age. So this style of music is sort of in my blood, in my DNA, which feels weird because I never really studied organ, but I studied composition at Eastman School of Music. I was a freelance composer and studio player in New York City for years. And then I came out, I started playing on television with the Conan O'Brien show in 1993. We came out to LA in 2009 and I was with him for another almost 10 years here until 2018. And now I've just been set loose on the music world and doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, I think for me, it was never a question as to what I was going to do for a career. I mean, I growing up in Ohio, especially Northern Ohio, I guess we considered ourselves East Coast, but we're solidly Midwest. I always envied people on the coast because they had so much more of a scene, you know, music scene. The music business was all in New York and L.A. and so for some degree, Chicago and certainly Boston, you know. But it's only like later in life that I realized how profound the Ohio upbringing was because the stuff was in my ears. So go Ohio.
Guitarist John Chiodini forms the rest of the trio. He's full of a variety of music too, having toured and or recorded with Peggy Lee, Natalie Cole, Bobby Caldwell, Nina Simone, Barbara Streisand, and Michael Bublé, just to name a few.
Well, I started young, man. Thinking back, I had an uncle who played accordion. I had an uncle married into the family. He played like lap steel guitar. So we had a little band, played a lot of Italian songs. But, you know, I got into music that way, loving to play with other people. That was the whole thing. It was like the best. I got into like listening to rock and roll really early. Got into playing that. I can remember playing in like bands, big bands when I was a kid. And I always used to say, hey, turn the guitar down, you know. And but when I got to play with rock and roll bands, they would be, hey, turn the guitar up. So I kind of gravitated toward that. Then got like listening to all the great guys from Django Reinhardt, and Barney Kessel, and Wes Montgomery, and really got into like loving jazz. I was in the Boston area, got to do a lot of work there. I moved out to L.A. on the Maynard Ferguson band. That's how I moved out here. And I've been working out in the L.A. area, you know, a lot of road bands and stuff. Loving Biscodini, man.
Thank you.
give Kurt credit for the actual genius of the record, which is that he started with a drum track. I've been composing to drum tracks for years, but it's usually a loop. It's usually a 4-bar pattern or an 8-bar pattern. And then you just cycle it until you get something good. And then maybe you chop it up and then send it out for collaboration. It comes back and, you know, maybe we should make this 2 bars longer, whatever, you know, but his tune was already there. It was 2¾ minutes long. It had an intro, verse, first chorus, first, you know, whatever. And then it was done. Well, there was no room for error. So I just plugged a tune into it and it worked. And there was no back and forth. There was no like tearing out of your hair, trying to figure out whether we should put an extra bar. This is the kind of thing that happens when you collaborate. You get into this downward spiral of committee decisions and everyone's got great ideas. What great idea do you use? There was really only one sort of very almost linear path to composing these tunes. Wouldn't you say that's kind of like what, by the time John got these tunes, it was like, oh, okay, this is what it is. It was transparent. The process was transparent and it flowed. And we could do the performance from beginning to end in our own studio as if we were playing live.
Yeah. And that was the whole idea, is that we approached making this music as if we were in a studio or playing live together, making the composition from top to bottom as musicians. And secondly, I wanted it to be fun. Zero hassle, zero stress. And what better to make music when you're in your bathrobe and, you know, you could record at your leisure and send it to your buddies and your band and they can make music. And then we send it to Bobby D and he mixes it and it sounds amazing. So, yeah, that's how easy it was. And John added his genius to the song Karen Stay Home. He came up with a beautiful, beautiful melody and chord changes with that. And it's a beautiful ballad. Whenever it's on, whenever I play it in my studio, my wife and I dance to it.
Into a drum track. I had never done it that way before. Like, and what Scotty was mentioning, like, I'm just taking it on faith that this was the song form. This, you know, you didn't change this form. And so when I got into it, I found out that in composing that tune, it came out as a 24-bar tune rather than a 32-bar tune or some other form. It was like 24 bars. That's what it was. And so I started putting it on there, and then because the drum track was happening, and the way, Kurt, the way you flowed from one little section, the way you set up another section, it allowed me to go to a place that I probably wouldn't have gone to if I was doing the song on my own. So it was just great. I had such a great time doing that.
Donuts spelled backwards, and that was the first song, and I sent that,
and it was hard.
Yeah. Well, 'cause
it was hard.
Yeah, and I sent that with just an idea of like a Latin-y feel, and I thought, well, let me just play it down as a song. I don't know what it sounds like, but I'll play it in a song form, and I'll let those guys deal with it.
Oh, I'm really partial to the first thing we did, just because it has that fresh, to me, that fresh sound. It's a really complicated, difficult tune that I had to, it took a while to work it out, to get all those lines working.
You know, I go, the first one, Scotty, I told you that I heard that and you sent the chart. And the first thing I realized is that my fingers didn't want to do that when it came to playing those lines, you know?
Yeah, it's a riff that feels great on the organ. That's like, I knew it would be just impossible cross fretting or whatever you do.
Oh man. And then, so it was just great that coming together. Like, but I'll tell you, man, in answer to your question, Mike, it really depends on the day. I'm telling you, sometimes that boogaloo just kicks my ass.
I think jazz does weave in and out of each and every tune, though, because I think, you know, we're all coming from that. So, right. So there's that thread in there. But because of all of our influences through the years, it just everything seeped in, and I think that's where we didn't govern ourselves or each other and what needed to be played. I mean, no one told anyone what to do. That's what was great about it. We just said, okay. I'm the drummer, you're the guitar player, you're the B3 player, you're the mixer, right. Engineer, and producer. Okay, go. For me, it was the opening tune of the record, The Mask. Because I defied anything and everything drums. That was recorded with a drum MIDI controller called the Drum Cat. And those are all MIDI drums. Actually, when starting this record, I wanted to do the whole record on that thing just to kind of do a F you to the drum community of like, you know, I'm not going to play drums. I'm going to play electronic drums and prove to you all that it could be done. And obviously that didn't happen, but it did happen with that opening tune, The Mask. And it sounded so good and it felt so good. And it was defying anything and everything, all drums. And I thought, well, let's keep it. Cause if I were to replace it with real drums, it wouldn't have the delight I would have every time it played. So for me, that's my favorite.
As they remain hopeful for a time they can play live again together in the same room, each Biscodini member remains grateful for the experiences they've had in music.
It was just something that was always in my blood, and it was something I knew I had to do because I knew that if I took another route in my life, it would not be satisfying and I would not be living my truth. That happens with everybody. We really have a desire and we don't follow through with that desire. And always in the back of your mind, there's that little tapping on the shoulder or on the top of your head of regret. And I just never, ever wanted to live my life with that tapping going on because I wanted to know and feel every aspect of being a musician, which is the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows. You know, it's not for everybody. It could be super stable. It could be super unstable and anywhere in between, but that in itself is what makes it exciting and worth living for, I think. So there's my two cents. I hope that makes sense.
Well, I could definitely echo, you know, everything you said there. I mean, to me, there's never been a question as to what I wanted to do with my life. But when you grow up as a kid with a really good ear, I had a really good ear when I was a kid. I could sort of hear stuff and play it. So the world of music, no matter what it was, made sense to me. I could hear a Sousa march or the theme from Batman on TV or go to a concert, the Cleveland Orchestra, and I sort of got it, even as a kid. But all of my musicality as a kid up to age maybe even 30 was so centered around so almost like narcissistic and onanistic and just so self-centered. Like, I'm a musician, I got to get good, I'm doing this, I'm playing. It took me a long time to realize that the purpose of music is to connect, is to be an artist and to connect with the community and the world. And it's out there, and it's about people, and it's about community, and it's about sharing, and it's about performing. It took me a long time to get that. That's what keeps me going now. And now with the internet, we've got the community is worldwide, you know, literally. And a lot of the teaching I'm doing is doing people from mainland China and from the Philippines and from England on the Zoom calls. And it's the most amazing thing. It's like we're suddenly since the pandemic, we're a global village. We always heard about that in the 70s, right? We were a global village and whatever. Now we sort of are. And it's great and it's bad and whatever, but it's very invigorating to be on that high level when you're recording and to be able to do a whole take and have it sound really good when you listen to the playback and realize that you're making a permanent record of music that's going to live forever. And it sounds great. That's a really great feeling. That's why I love recording.
I've got to echo both what you said, Scotty, and what Kurt said. You know, we deal with what everybody deals with pain and happiness and stress, and ups and downs, and, you know, having a great gig on the road and making plenty of dough. And then, like, 2 weeks later, like, what happened? You know, so playing live with a band, communicating with a band, it's impossible to say. Like, you're playing, and you're so totally into it, and then you find out, and it's happened with this band, it's happened with a lot of people, that's why I love it. But you realize that you're playing, all of a sudden you're playing the same lick together that there's never been rehearsed, it's not written down.
You're a into language.
You're into the same zone, you're feeling the same thing. It's incredible, you know. And as far as recording, it's such a high level. And of course, you want to do it perfect. You want to do that first take. But then to hear it back and to hear you play something that you've never played before, so that you know that you really weren't playing it safe, not 100%. You were going for it, and how great that makes you feel about your own sense of accomplishment.
You become one in the band, and then when you play for us as an audience, then, as Scott said, that connection is there, and then we feel as one, and it's all one.
Yeah, and you know, like that goes back, Mike, not to interrupt, but there's always been that thing about, like, the artist, the performer, and the quote dumb audience that's really not so dumb, because they know when it's real. Maybe they don't know all of the crap, you know, about music and everything, but man, they know when it's real.
Live or recorded or on Zoom, Biscodini Organ Trio sounds genuine to me. Please check out their new record called Lockdown. We'll close out the show with a bonus song they put together in just a couple days with me in mind. I'm sharing it with my colleague Mike Taylor for letting me know about this band, and hey, all Mikes for that matter, all Mikes unite behind this song. It's called Mr. Mike. We'll put the YouTube link in the script attached to this music journey as well at wcbe.org, so you can check the guys out in band quarantine. My thanks to Kurt, Scott, and John for their time, their music, and the following groove I'll brag about forever. I'm Mike Foley. Talk to you again on the next Music Journey.